Hey, y'all. Pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by Tim Preston and Jeff Haley. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be going over the start, the official start of Texas basketball as it starts within the week. We have Northern Colorado, Cal Baptist, and the number 23 Purdue Boilermakers to start off the schedule. Talk about what we're expecting out of these games, what we're looking for in these games, and what we're going to be able to see in these games to predict and take a look at what we're going to be seeing in the rest of the season. But before we get started, we got a report from Johnny Brashear straight out of Italy. Let's go ahead and get to that right now.
Buongiorno, everybody. This is Johnny, bitter white guy, reporting to you from Italy. I'm going to say I'm in Venice right now. Maybe I'm in Rome, but I'm definitely in Italy right now. I just bought a timeshare on a Vespa. The guy seemed really enthusiastic about it, and I think it's going to work out well because those things do nothing but appreciate in value. Much like Chris Berman's two-minute drill, I'm going to do a two-minute drill that actually goes for 6 to 8 minutes, and I'm going to ramble for a while and not reach any valid conclusions. So strap in, everybody, while I talk about the Big 12 and how I think it's going to work out. Short version is, I think there's four tiers to this league this year. First tier is Kansas by themselves because they are loaded. Second tier is going to be Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas, Texas Tech, and Baylor. I think all five of those teams have a good shot at finishing second or finishing sixth, depending on how things work out. I don't think there's going to be a lot of difference between the between that group. And I think they are a bit above the third tier, which I have as Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. Carrying out the bottom is a fourth tier of TCU, which I put there mainly because I don't think anybody knows what that group's going to be. There are so many newcomers. Jamie Dixon had to do so much scrambling to fill that roster out that they could jump up into the next tier, but it seems maybe a little bit unlikely. What? I'm sorry. No, I don't want any biscotti. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So let's talk about what decides Texas's fate. Because I think you could make a plausible case that they finish anywhere between second and sixth this year. And it boils down to five things. Can Shaka Smart and Luke Jokličić synthesize their defensive philosophies to create an elite defense? I kind of feel like they're going to do that. Both of them are really good at what they do in terms of defensive strategy. So I think that one will probably work out. Second, can Neil Berry maintain his offensive efficiency while increasing the pace, whether that's a east-west pace or a north-south pace? We'll see. Third, can the Texas shooters take the next step and get the team three-point percentage into the top 100 in D1? They were 150th last year, which is top half, but I would like to see them add a percent or two to their makes to get them into the 100th or better. Fourth, can Texas get the rebounding numbers into the top half of the D1? I'm not very optimistic about the offensive rebounding numbers, but defensive rebounding should be a focus and hopefully will improve. They were in the 200s last year in defensive rebounding, so they need to be better at that. Fifth, can they get their free throw shooting into the top half of D1? The perennial complaint about Texas basketball teams is they can't shoot free throws. And, they were about 30 spots back from where they need to be in the top half. So, I think each one of those that gets answered in the affirmative, is probably going to, help them push themselves up another spot. We'll see how they end up doing. I have them third in the conference this year, but we all know I tend to kind of overestimate them. So we'll see where they go. Good luck, everybody. I'm sorry. No, actually, I don't do any hand modeling, but you're like the third person to ask. Thank you very much. Ciao, everybody.
Grazie, Johnny. But without further ado, let's get right into it. We got Jeff. Thank you for coming on last second to join the show in the stead of Johnny Brashear, who selfishly took a trip to Italy. God, does he even know he's on a podcast?
Yeah, I know. That was a selfish move. I also selfishly took a trip to Edison, New Jersey. So I'm happy to join you remotely.
Yeah, you're on site in Edison, New Jersey. That sounds like you're having a blast. It looks like the hotel room, they really got you up and everything.
Yeah, no, this is the finest Courtyard Marriott that you will find.
That side of New Jersey?
It's excellent.
But so let's go ahead and hop right into this. Texas basketball starting just in time for Texas football to absolutely collapse. So let's get into what we're going to be seeing out of Texas with them starting off with North Colorado. You know, only the best home schedule for Longhorn fans. Am I right, y'all?
Always. Year after year, just treating those Irwin Center fans to incredible home games in the non-conference.
What are we expecting for the attendance in this game, this first one of the year? What's the over-under?
Well, there was no, like, preseason glorified intra-squad scrimmage. So I'm going to say, I'll put it at 7,500.
Here's the thing, is it's also going to be the banner drop night.
7,200.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think, Jeff? You got a prediction for me here?
If Tim's going to say the over-under is 7,500, I'm going to go under. It's a Tuesday night. I know it's the opening game of the season, so that will make it a little bit more intriguing. If you had this game scheduled, you know, in early December, it would probably be 2,000 people. So the opener, I'm thinking we're going to be in that 5,000 to 6,000 people range.
Cool. So for the 100 fans who are there, what are they going to be seeing out of this new Texas basketball team? The very first to come out after the NIT championship. What am I looking at here on the court? And we'll start off here in the front court. What are we seeing, and what are you going to be looking for?
I guess for me, I'm in the front court. I'll be looking at like two things. One is first of all, kind of the development of Jericho Sims. Like, what's he going to look like as a player this year? Right? Is he going to look kind of lost like he did early in the season last year, or is he going to just sort of relax and play basketball? And then I'll also be interested to see, likewise, like, how much has HEPA improved? Has he gotten stronger in the offseason? Does he have, like, a little bit more comfort level with the Division I game now? So in terms of the returning players that I'm interested in seeing, it's those guys. And then the other thing I'm interested in figuring out is, you know, what is the rotation likely to look like, right? We know Sims is going to play a lot. And after that, it's kind of hard to say, right? We could see a lot of Will Baker. We could see not as much of Will Baker. It's just hard to know where everyone is kind of right now. So that's what I'm going to be curious to see is how the minutes look like, likely to shake out early in the year.
I will say having Will Baker on the team is going to be very confusing for me the entire year because it sounds just exactly like my name. So when you started talking about Will Baker, I was like, wait, what? Oh. just for a second, it caught my attention. But Tim, what do you think?
No, I think he hits the nail on the head. I'm intrigued by what the rotations are going to be as well. I think we're going to learn a lot about the team early. You know, if you'd have asked me at the end of last season, I would have eared Kamaka as that obvious stretch four kind of player that would fit in well with a guy like Sims because of his ability to pass the ball, his ability to kind of be a quick shooter. We're hearing some reports that he's not starting, even though Ramey has been out in those scrimmages. But it was Cunningham and Liddell who were starting at the wing and kind of combo forward spots. Does that ring true? Is that sending Kamaka a message? Are we still figuring out like what Kamaka is capable of defensively? What about, as Jeff says, what do we look at for Will Baker's minutes? What do we understand as far as Kai Jones getting any minutes at that kind of front sports? There's just so many question marks. But I think with the front court, we need to figure out inside of Jaklic's new defense, what does our defensive rebounding look like? What are the responsibilities as far as defensive rebounding? How much easier is it for us to kind of spatially defensive rebound inside of his non-helping man defense. Some of those question marks will be interesting for me because we have the athletes and the length to rebound pretty well, but our front court is gonna have to kind of really step up from that standpoint. I think we have a lot of guys who potentially could be fine, but no like rebounding savants. You know, like, oh, this guy's a good athlete, or that guy's nice and has some good length, but no one that really jumps out to you is like, oh, that guy is our stud rebounder. So what difference does that make defensively? And then offensively, who can function well in the 4-out-1 in offense, or even the 5-out occasionally if Baker is serving as the 5. So I think there'll be some wrinkles on both sides of the floor that'll be interesting to see. But yeah, the biggest thing for me is what's our rotation, even this early in the season, because, you know, he's going to want to establish as much as he can with a tough game, as our second game on the road there. How capably defensively can we rebound and defensive possessions?
So let's take a look at the backcourt now, obviously led by Courtney Ramey and Matt Coleman here. In these first two games, or in these two starter games of North Colorado and Cal Baptist, what are we seeing and what are we looking for out of these two guys and the rest of, you know, Jace Fabris and
Yeah, I guess for me, the question that I want to see is, what do these guys look like offensively? And really, is there going to be anyone on this team from the backcourt that's capable of getting to the basket and scoring at the basket at a decent rate? Because when we look at the roster last year versus this year, like, that was the thing that Kerwin Roach did exceptionally well. He was the best sort of creator of the guy who could find his way to the basket and convert at a high rate. It's really not the strength, or at least wasn't the strength thus far of Courtney Ramey, right? Like, he actually shot for almost the same percentage from 3-point range as he did from 2, right? So what he will look like going to the basket, if he'll be able to get to the basket and finish, Matt Coleman's ability to finish at the rim, that's to me like the biggest question mark offensively for the backcourt. I think they're going to shoot the ball pretty well. I think Fabris, we pretty much know what we're going to get from Jace Fabris. Like, he's going to put the ball in the hole from the perimeter and will occasionally score going to the basket, but mostly he's just going to shoot. And so I feel pretty comfortable with these three guys. Like, I think they're the strength of the team, but we don't know really, like, has either Coleman or Ramey made a leap in their ability to convert around the basket. And if they have, that really sets what the ceiling could be for this team. If they haven't, then we have to have different expectations for the season.
Yep. I completely agree with that. I think that our, you know, from both standpoints, we already talked about defensive rebounding. For me, the other huge point is, what kind of action can we get at the rim? Because obviously, as Jeff said, losing Kerwin is huge, but losing Dylan and Jackson is equally big as far as like their ability to get some of our paint touches, to find an opportunity to get the ball there at the rim. And if they get fouled, then to convert at the free throw line. They, all three of those guys were both high frequency and high efficiency when they're at the foul line. So what do we have from that? As Jeff said, you know, Matt was much more likely to be kind of a 8 to 10 foot floater kind of guy when he gets into the lane. Courtney got better at getting all the way to the rim kind of towards the end. Actually didn't drive much at all in the first 15 or 20 games last year's, but incorporated a little bit more wrinkle with that. So was that kind of more of a byproduct of how often we allowed Kerwin to be our main penetrator with that? Or was that a question of, hey, the spacing wasn't what we wanted it to be? We'll see as the season kind of gets underway here, but I want to take a look they should at least in two of the first three games, Courtney and Matt should dominate from a standpoint of like, hey, who's in control of the ball? How are we getting to our offensive sets? You know, this is year two of Neil Barry, so there shouldn't be any kind of question marks or like surprises with that. But yeah, I don't want to just see them play well. I want to see them play well in a diverse kind of style. We know that they can shoot threes. We know that they can create for others. Well, can they get to the rim? We know that they can dictate offense, but how can they kind of spread the wealth around and make sure that spacing that we should be able to have equates to some open looks and some good shots from our shooters. So that's the clear strength of our team, and I'm excited about it, but you know, question marks are all over the floor for us still.
Well, and here's one question mark I have is Shaka Smart this season. In these first three games, what are you going to be looking for out of the coaching of Shaka Smart? Any specific questions that you want answered immediately or going to be able to tell from Shaka Smart in these first three games?
That's tough to necessarily kind of pinpoint, I suppose. I am interested to see how different we look defensively. I can't count. I mean, it would take dozens of hands to count how many times we've seen our center prospects switch off onto a ball handling point guard over the years that Shaka's been here. Like, you know, so that's going to be an interesting thing to not see that this year, or at least potentially see that a lot less. So, on the one hand, it's commendable that Shaka's been able to bring in such a good staff. On the other hand, like, I feel like everyone sort of has the impression that Shaka is really coaching for his job this year. And when Rick, they're not the same coach, of course, but when Rick had to coach for his job, or when things got tight with Rick, he squeezed that much harder. Do we see that same kind of, coping mechanism with Shaka, or is he genuinely going to give his staff the kind of freedom and leeway that it looks like he will? So, you know, I think that Shaka is enough of a motivator and certainly a genuine enough guy that I'm not really concerned as far as his ability to cultivate relationships this early in the season. But I think it's got to be more than just, oh, we're building towards something. I think they kind of have to win at a decent clip sort of right away. So we'll see if he's kind of got the buttons kind of pushing in that direction right off the rip, or if it's going to take a little while.
Yeah. And Jeff, let me go ahead and make this a little bit of an easier question for you. What's the big question that you want answered for this season in terms of Shaka Smart?
Thanks for making the question easier for me, because that really helps.
No worries.
Good looking out. I think Tim's point is a good one. It's like, you know, given sort of the, let's say, larger jaw pressure that we're starting to run into as we get closer and closer to the end of Shaka Smart's contract, you know, how coaches that are a little bit under job heat tend to respond is they do tend to kind of like squeeze tighter and clamp down more. But, you know, part of bringing in the staff is that maybe you don't have to do it as much, and maybe you can kind of let some things, you know, let some of the assistants that he's brought in run, you know, let Yaklich run the defense and just let him go to work and do it. I guess I feel like the trajectory of the program right now seems to me like it's pretty good. Like, they're getting players. The talent cycle is kind of, we're headed towards the peak of the talent cycle now, where they'll have mostly upperclassmen playing key roles, particularly next year. So I think, you know, I think the trajectory is good. It's just, will it happen at a pace that's quick enough to keep people happy, right? And then even when you get to a peak in the talent cycle, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win big. You still have to, like, make shots. You still have to make plays. Things still have to break your way. So I think that the path for Shaka Smart's gotten a little bit narrower because of the last few years, and because of, it just hasn't gone the way anyone expected it, really. It hasn't probably gone the way he's expected it. But now they actually have a pretty good roster that's in pretty good shape. And again, to me, it's, is someone going to step forward and make a big leap and be, you know, an all-conference level player? And when they get to that point, when that happens, then I think we'll be ready to roll.
Yeah, Jeff brings up an important point, and I guess I would say if you follow some of the college basketball guys around the country, you're seeing almost no love for Texas players on, like, any players of the year list, or, oh, the top players in the Big 12 conference. I mean, they'll throw in Matt, like, at the bottom of, like, some kind of, like, to-watch list or whatever, but there's not a whole lot there. And in some ways, that's kind of indicative of the fact that, like, this is a team that kind of has no superstars. You know, for all the superstars that Rick brought in over the years, this is a team that is very solid, has great athleticism, has good length. You look up and down the lineup, and there's some good depth everywhere. But there's also, like, I don't, like, who's our guy? Like, who's the guy? You know, and I think it could be Courtney. Yeah, you know, and what does that kind of look like? And so if we are devoid of that guy, you know, if clearly maybe Kerwin was not that guy last year, and we don't maybe necessarily have that obvious player this year, then Shaka's ability to, again, right from the start here, have an ability to showcase, okay, no, we don't have the superstar, but we do have 10, 12 guys who over the course of the off season were able to really get better, to progress, and we're going to show that, like, you know, the sum of all these parts together is going to make up for that lack of that one transcendent player, which I think is probably going to have to happen. Like, if we're going to win a lot of games this year, it's going to happen on the strength of the collective, as opposed to put the ball in this guy's hand and we're going to win. So that's something that I think we probably will be able to see somewhat right away. Even if you understand it, like Northern Colorado and California, but Presbyterian California,
Baptist,
Mormon, Captain, Episcopalian or whatever. So like we'll see what happens.
Playing without a star player is a hard way to go, because inevitably, particularly on the offensive end of the floor, stuff bogs down every team. There's no single team in basketball at any level that doesn't go through periods of time where their offense just gets stuck in the mud and bogs down. And you need a player that's capable of bailing you out of bad possessions when that happens. And that's the thing that's probably for me the biggest concern is it's not clear who that will be, who will bail out bad possessions.
Right. I'm interested to see if Texas can have a B game or a C game and still come out with a win. If they have the talent to be able to do that and to understand the offense and the defense enough at this stage to perhaps have not the best game against Purdue, but still win away in a team it's going to be a tough environment. They're going to, you know, there's not much to do in Indiana. I'm sorry. It's y'all's neck of the woods, Jeff and Tim, but
they say it's the crossroads of America. I mean, that's the state motto, I think.
Oh, so. Is it? Okay.
Yeah,
well,
you can cross other places, but yeah. No, I think that this team is actually well equipped to win rock fights. So if they get into really slog, low scoring games, you know, I think they'll defend pretty well. And I think and I know while we have some concerns about who's going to get the rebounds, I think that they'll get rebounds, they'll defend, they'll be able to get out of possessions on that end of the floor. So there may be some slogs early in the year too, right? This is a team that can probably win that style of game. Not that that's always that much fun to watch.
It'll definitely get Texas fans going. That's for sure. Like, what the hell, this is our third, fourth, fifth year of this offense? Why aren't they scoring like NBA players? Here's a question I do have for y'all is, with y'all's insider information from the Texas basketball program, what is something that will surprise the layman Texas basketball fan this year that, you know, maybe at this point you've heard it so much that it won't surprise, but somebody who is just coming in this year to Texas basketball after, you know, they saw the NIT, awesome, happy, you know, congrats, basketball doesn't exist, come in on Tuesday, November 5th, what is going to surprise these Texas basketball fans?
Well, if they're fans who have watched the team since Shaka has been around, every single year you've had some type of big man who is not just like athletically gifted and long and talented or whatever, but also someone that you kind of had to throw the ball into, like you had to give them touches to really kind of best utilize them, whether it was Ridley his first year or Jared Allen his second year or Mo the third year or Jackson last year or Dylan last year, whatever that would be. I think that this year you don't really need to incorporate Jericho getting the ball on a high number of possessions. Like, he's the kind of guy who is going to be content to, hey, I'm just going to screen here and then screen away and then ball screen and then screen away and then roll. And, but like, you don't need to like give him the ball at 10 or 12 feet and say, go to work, young man. Like, he'll have some options for that. So I think that one of the things that you'll probably see is when that's one of your offensive sets is to get those guys the ball in those situations, it can tend to like stagnate movement because you want to make sure that you're allowing your big man as much space as possible. So I think that people will be surprised at how even though the personnel is not wildly different, at how different the offense looks when that part is not really a big piece of our offensive system. So I would imagine you're going to see a lot more off-ball movement just because that's a lot more necessary in four-out or even five-out offenses. I think you're going to see a lot of situations where there'll be more opportunities for dribble penetration from guards in open spaces because, again, that's just sort of what that offense does. Some more read and react pieces away from the ball. So, yeah, hopefully people will be surprised at the fact that, like, oh, there's not that obvious skilled big man inside who needs his touches in that way.
Yeah, those are going to be surprising to me too. I guess if you are completely new to Texas basketball, I think the thing that would surprise you is aside from the home attendance. I'll be surprised to learn whatever happens. To be honest, because I feel like I don't have a great degree of certainty on what this team's even going to look like. You know, when you put them all on the court, it's odd because it's a lot of players that we know and we've seen, but, I don't really know what this team's going to look like with, you know, losing so much of the focal points of the offense from last year. So we may all be surprised. Even people who aren't new to the program.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and get on to looking forward at the teams they're playing in specific. Texas is going to have a pretty good matchup right away with number 23, Purdue. It's going to be a difficult game away with a very hostile crowd. What should we expect out of Purdue? Who are the Longhorns facing in these Purdue Boilermakers?
It's going to be a lot of familiar players to people who watched the Purdue game last year. Now, notably, Carson Edwards is gone. Ryan Klein is gone. Grady Eifert. Those three guys are gone. So they're Carson Edwards, by far their best player, and two other really outstanding perimeter shooters have gone. But Purdue is a program with a lot of depth and that really has things rolling. So I would say, you know, this year the key player for Purdue is probably going to be their big guy, Matt Harms, who has a fantastic hairstyle. For those who missed the game last year, you'll enjoy that. And he's just a very large human being. He's extremely tall. He's got some skill, and he's a rim protector. He'll create a lot of problems on both ends of the floor for Texas. They also have they bring Nojel Eastern back, who is an interesting player in that he's a sort of wing perimeter player who absolutely cannot shoot at all, but is still quite effective offensively. So he's a guy who Texas has to be able to stay in front of. And then there's just beyond that, a lot of depth in the program. So I think honestly, Texas is going to have its hands full, right? This is going to be a game where, like Purdue is going to be a significant favorite to win this game, right? So it'll be a tough test on the road, you know, next Friday.
Yeah, if you look at the early season metrics and sort of the prognostications of what both teams are going to probably look like, it's unsurprising that Purdue is getting the love that they are. I actually have, from the outside looking in, even more question marks about Purdue than I have about us, because it's easy to look at some of these players with how they were and how efficient they were with Carson getting the kind of attention that he did. So it's one thing to shoot 43% when defenses are keying on you as opposed to 43% when defenses are keying on Edwards. So how any of that looks, and it's probably nice that we're catching them game two before they've had a chance to figure that out. But yeah, I mean, look, Painter's a good coach. Like, he knows his shit, and they're very solid defensively. He's got good length. They, you know, they play hard. You know, it's a pretty solid Big Ten team in kind of all the caveats that would come along with that. I think that we've got our own question marks as far as like we've been talking about with our front court personnel situations. And so whenever you're playing a guy that or a team that has a potentially dominant big man like Harms is, or at least could be, can he get a guy like Sims into foul trouble early? If so, what the hell do we do? how does some of that look? That'll be interesting to see. But I do think that there's plenty of question marks from Purdue's side as they figure out who are they, what does it look like without a guy that just so dominated the ball last year. like Edwards did. It's a game that it certainly, whenever you're playing on the road against a team that should be decent, you know, you don't want to just expect to win, but it wouldn't surprise me if Texas has a pretty solid chance to win that game, but it's game two and both teams have got a lot of figuring things out to do.
I think you're right. I think the lack of, they don't have a obvious, again, kind of like Texas, they don't have an obvious like lead guard scorer. Maybe it'll be Eastern. Maybe it'll be Aaron Wheeler. Maybe they'll find a way to get Evan Boudreau more involved in the offense. And I just really want to mention him because he kind of looks to me like an accountant with a gambling problem. He has that kind of visual aesthetic. So I really enjoy him. I think that you're right. I think in a way it's Purdue's going to be a very deep team that's going to defend very well. And it will be interesting to see how they replace the production of the guys who left.
Oh man, you are spot on with Evan Boudreau. But what is Texas going to have
to
do?
He's sleeping on the couch in the basement. He's on the outs.
Oh, he's absolutely.
He looks like he's run his hands through his hair way too many times. But what is Texas going to have to do versus Purdue to get this win? What are they going to have to focus on, especially to beat the Boilermakers in Indiana?
I mean, they're going to have to beat a team that has a lot of size. Right. That's going to, I think we talked about this question of how do the Texas guards do going to the basket? How is Texas going to score inside the paint and score around the basket? I mean, against Purdue, that's going to be particularly difficult, right? Cause Purdue has a lot of size along the front line. Obviously Harms is gigantic, but they also have a lot of length, you know, at sort of the other spots, you know, the four spot and at the wing spot. So getting baskets against the size of Purdue, I think, is going to be a struggle.
Yeah, no question. And I think the old adage with any of the college basketball stuff is you go as your guards go. And that hasn't really been the case for Texas. Or maybe actually it probably has. Yeah. But I don't think it's been – I'm not sure since Shaka's first year we've been able to say that the true strength in our team has been in the backcourt. This year that's unquestioned. Like our strength is those, you know, that four-headed monster of hopefully Coleman, Ramey, Febris, and Andrew Jones, provided Andrew is able to play like we hope he can. So I think a lot of tough games, like pretty much any tough game that you see all year long, how do we win? Those four players come up big, or at least they play to a level that you can say they're as good or better than their counterparts from the other team in the backcourt. So in previous seasons, you would say how much can we incorporate a guy like Dylan and Jackson? How effectively can we get the ball to Mo in dominant situations? How can we get Jarrett looking at mid-range shots where he's open? This year it's how can we get our guards going? How can we get, you know, open shots for Jace? How can we find driving angles for Courtney and Matt? And if that happens, I think we'll have a chance. But if our backcourt is not, I don't want to say dominant, but if they're not like, oh, really good, then I think tough wins, particularly on the road, it will be pretty unlikely.
Right, right. So what do we learn about this team if they win? What is the big takeaway that you are likely have if they win in West Lafayette?
I mean, I guess my takeaway will be that's, you know, this trip to West Lafayette is probably the toughest game that they are going to play until conference play starts, right? Like this is
Duke.
The best
Duke
team
at Madison. If they get that.
That would be a neutral game, neutral court game. You know, it's not home. We'll see, Duke is going to be good, but they're not going to be, I don't anticipate Duke is going to be as good as they have in the last few years. They don't have the kind of players that they've had. So this, you know, this is going to be a win would be a pretty positive sign for me. You know, it would be an outstanding win in terms of, you know, making your case for the NCAA tournament. But just in general, I mean, that would be a hugely positive indicator if they win. I mean, I'd be quite enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, and at some point you hate to just simplify it to this, but look, we got to get to like 20. You know, 20 or 21 should be, that needs to be what we're thinking about, like this all season long. Like, is that number possible? And a win against Purdue, as silly as it sounds, like in the second game of the season, a win against Purdue makes 20 more possible. It makes 21 even more possible. You know, so I think that from that standpoint, we need to see not just how ready we are to compete, not just what this offense looks like with this personnel, not just how Jakic is able to kind of capably insert himself into our program, but like, no, we need some wins. we need to win. We need to figure out how we can get some of these games. And if not Purdue, okay, then what, right? So, and this, we should win. I mean, gosh, we should win every non-conference home game pretty comfortably, I would think. But a game like this is a game we can steal, particularly early in the season, particularly considering what they are losing and what we hope to be seeing from our own team. But yeah, I think a win would help for a number of reasons, but mostly because of which column you're adding a digit to.
A win is good because it's a win. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Great analysis,
y'all. Top notch.
Glad we got some of the best Texas basketball writers on the show.
Fly ball, God. You guys seen Major League 2. Anyways, it's not as very good. Is that our clientele? Is that our demographic?
Well, I don't know. Right, sure. Yeah.
Major League 2 video watchers.
So, let's spin it on its head. If they lose in West Lafayette, what is the likely takeaway going to be? Is it still going to be a, hey, this is, we can spin this into a positive light, or is it a lot more negative than we would like to think?
Well, college sports is not pro sports from a number of standpoints, but I think the manner in which they lose will make a difference. Are they close? Are they competitive? Do they come up with some big stops and some big shots when they need to and just kind of don't get it done, or do we look in over our heads? You know, is Ramey still a 9 point, 2.5 rebound, 2.5 assist guy and not ready to ascend to like a truly very capable player? Does Matt still have the issues with he's deferring too much to the other ball handlers? Does Jace shoot 3 for 13 or some shit? Like, you know, like that stuff like that. If we're going to, as we've been talking about a few times, if we're going to figure out how we can function without our dominant playmaker, then that's got to be, we need to see some progress from all over the floor. And if we see that progress and we lose, okay, right? It's an away game at a ranked team. If we kind of get trounced, or if we see guys kind of making the same mistakes that they made last year and maybe that progress isn't there, then, I mean, there's a situation where I can feel like pretty comfortable, like, oh shit. Even in game two, as much as you don't want to, you know, pull any plugs or whatever, but there's some ways that we could lose that would be okay. And there's definitely some ways we could lose that would be alarming.
Yeah. I think one thing is sort of the history of Shaka Smart's time at Texas, if you go back and look, is that his teams haven't done very well at the start of the season, right? Even teams that have been playing pretty well later in the year, November has been quite frequently a rough month, right? So I think, you know, if the team plays poorly against Purdue, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be bad all year. Sometimes these teams have taken a lot of time to hit their stride. But yeah, a loss where the team plays, where you have a good performance, right? You can play well and lose. You can play badly and win, although that's hard to do on the road against a good team. But, you know, you can play well and lose. And I think we can tell the difference between that and playing like crap, right? If they get run off the floor, it's a bad sign.
Well, I can't think of another question off that. We're only at like, what, 30 minutes?
Do you want to do Northern Colorado next? I'm ready to go on Northern Colorado.
Are you actually ready to go on Northern Colorado?
Let him do
his
thing, my guy.
All right, fine. So let's take a look
Hoops
at the other
baby.
Two.
Let's go.
Let's go ahead and take a look at the other two teams that Texas is going to be able to see. Texas fans are going to be able to see up close and personal in Northern Colorado and California Baptist. Tim,
those damn disciples of Christ.
What are we actually? What? Who? Why the Bears? What are they? Who? What? I don't even know what to ask here. Like, why are we playing them?
So because you have to play someone, and you have to have a certain number of home games for season ticket packages, or people get upset. And this is why essentially every single university's home schedule in the non-conference is total garbage, right? It's not unique to Texas. They all look like this. So Northern Colorado, let's kind of shine this turd for you. they're actually All right. They're not that bad of a team. Okay.
They Believe it or not, they would have been one of Texas Tech's best non-conference games last year as far as by the metrics. That's wild, but it's true.
Absolutely. I mean, so last year they won 21 games total. They went 15-5 in their conference. They came in second in the Big Sky. So, I mean, you know, that's good. The other thing is they returned, well, their leading scorer from last year is gone, but they returned pretty much every player of significance, including a guy who I will bring your attention to, Bodie Hume. I think I'm saying his name right. Who can shoot the ball a bit and is probably going to be one of their primary offensive players. But they also have a decent big guy. So I think they're, I would describe them. We have to kind of calibrate this, right? If you look at the teams that Texas played in the non-conference schedule last year, you look at teams from, let's say, single bid leagues, right? On the one end, you had Radford and Grand Canyon that were both pretty good teams. And on the other end, you had the Citadel, right? These guys are like dead center in between those two endpoints. So what I would say is Northern Colorado is going to be a decent enough team in their league. They'll do all right. Texas should be able to handle them, but they're not going to be, it's not as terrible as it sounds.
That's what he and I know about Northern Colorado.
The combined knowledge on Northern Colorado. Jeff, can you pull the same magic out of your ass for California Baptist?
Why, yes, I can.
Thanks for asking, William.
All right. California Baptist, this is just their third year as a Division I program. I didn't go back and look at what they moved up from. I'm going to assume Division II. That doesn't necessarily mean they're bad. It's not uncommon for programs to move up from Division II to Division I and do pretty well pretty quickly, like Grand Canyon. Because usually to move up from Division II to Division I, you actually have to give a rip about doing well. So that kind of puts you ahead of maybe like 150 programs at the Division I level.
We're looking at you, Campbell.
Yep. Same to you, Prairie View A&M. Actually, Prairie View and A&M, I shouldn't pick on them. They're actually much better the last few years. So Cal Baptist, 16-15 last year in the Western Athletic Conference. The main guy for them is a guy named Milan Akwa. I think I'm pronouncing that right, but I'm just frankly guessing.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah, that's right. Yep,
yeah,
I know it.
Yeah. Good. Thank you for that. And what else is he's a guy who can score the ball, right? So he can really put the ball in the basket. So Texas is definitely going to, you know, have to worry about him. You could see him, you know, putting up, you know, a decent game and then, you know, Cal Baptist still getting run off the floor. The other piece is that the Cal Baptist's mascot is the Lancers, which is, I guess I was raised Catholic. I don't know a lot about the Baptist beliefs and teachings, but presumably that's important to them. That's what I've got.
Tim, your thoughts on Cal Baptist?
Hell, he took all my talking points. Sheesh. I think Congregationalists are, you know, they are generally pretty stoic, and they're often, you know, a little bit different than, like, you know, Missouri Synod Lutherans, for instance. So I think when you start talking about Presbyterians, they're going to be pretty tough. So Cal Presbyterian should be a decent game. And look, if God's on their side, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, you know, and Cal Baptist will also be a pretty darn difficult team as well.
Oh, we played them too. Gosh.
Yeah, then they got Cal Mormon. Cal mm-hmm. Episcopal.
Mm-hmm. Cal Disciple of Christ.
Cal Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Cal Evangelical United Brethren. So many. They're everywhere. Those are real things. I mean, I don't know what college is, but they're real things.
All we can say is that, you know, there are many schisms in the Christian churches of California, and so it makes it difficult to keep tabs on them all.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope they have a schism in their rebounding ability.
I'll be really interested in seeing what we can see out of Cal Baptist's Milan
Aqua.
Aqua?
I don't know.
Akakwa.
That's the guy. Aqua. That's the guy to keep your eye on.
Yeah, just because I don't know how to say his name. So I'll be interested to see what the announcers say about him and how they say his name. Same thing with Kajuan Hale, Haley. Another name that can be said in multiple different ways. I'll be interested to see if he sees the floor, and if so, how they say his name. Perhaps we also have Reed Nottage, because I want to see if he looks like he comes from ye old England, which is what his name sounds like he should be coming from. And yeah, that's my take on...
Reed Nottage is Australian.
Reed?
He's from Sydney, Australia.
Oh, so that's... Oh, you're right. Yeah. They have two Australians, actually. Tristan Forsyth.
They have a number of Australians on the roster. Yeah. This is Texas. One of Texas's probably three opponents in the non-conference season that has five or six people from Australia on it. That we'll see that again. That's a very common thing at these low-mid schools. Is they'll, you want to build a program, you do. Well, this is what St. Mary's did, right? You just recruit the hell out of Australia and have like a team with like 10 Australians on it. You know, that's a viable way to find players.
Man, those Aussies ball down there.
You think, what are the chances that Lowell Galindo spends over 5 minutes talking about Victoria Bitter or like some type of local Australian beer? I think it's at least decent. I don't know, maybe not. I mean, who is he going to scream about having dunks this year? Oh, no! No Kerwin. Good grief. We'll have to see.
We'll have to see. Yeah. But I think that brings us to everybody's favorite segment of the show.
Hello.
Pretend you're getting to know us. Tim, how many drinks are we down?
One and 5/6.
Cool, got it.
You guys.
Oh, you said 1/5/6. Okay. No, you're 1 and 5/6. Got it. So it won't be quite as
energetic. I'm glad, Tim, you're drinking. For me, sitting in this hotel room, if I was sitting here drinking, it would just make the whole scene far more depressing than it.
You can count on me to drink for others if I need to.
You're doing it in your own home, and that's okay.
And where is it? Edmonton, New Jersey?
I'm in Edison, New Jersey.
Oh, Edison, New Jersey.
Edison, New Jersey. Yes.
Does that have anything to do with Thomas Edison?
That is my assumption, yes. I did like look that up a bit, and it does seem to be named after Thomas Edison. He did some of his work around here. I'm also very close to the campus of Rutgers University. It's maybe 15 minutes away. So if you're trying to, you know, place yourself geographically, that's where we are.
Cool. Awesome. Knowledge I will definitely use in the future. But let's go ahead and ask this question today. As a kid, what did you expect to be amazing, only to be sorely disappointed once you reach adulthood? Who wants to start?
I'll go. And really what I will talk about is probably what is life's single greatest disappointment. And that is seeing an octopus.
I thought there was more.
No, there's nothing more disappointing, right? You go to the aquarium, you think, oh, I'm going to go see an octopus now. The octopus is going to be awesome with all these 8 tentacles and like doing kick-ass shit in the aquarium. And you go and you look into the tank with the octopus and you can't see anything. And then you're like, where's the octopus? And you look around and inevitably the octopus is hiding up in a corner of the tank. And you can't see a single thing. It doesn't do anything. It's just there. You might see like a little side of it. Yeah.
It's looking like a little bitch.
The single greatest disappointment of life is that.
That sounds like just most trips to the zoo.
No, the zoo is much more fun. You can see lots of stuff at the zoo. But the octopus, they suck, right?
All right.
I love it.
That was amazing.
What a take.
Tim?
Jesus Christ.
Tim?
Boy. God. Mine's lukewarm at best after that. You know, when you get your driver's license, it's such an incredible freeing moment. And like, you know, that first time when you drive anywhere of like any substance, and it's like, it's just you and you walk out of your car and like you know, at that point, like turn the key inside the little thing in the door and lock the door. Very exciting. And then you kind of come back and you know, tell your friends about that. You drive your friends somewhere. And just driving was so incredible until you become a fucking dad. And then every time you drive anywhere of substance, those buttholes in the back seat are watching their Kindles or iPads, and your wife is sitting on her phone, and you're sitting there without any music on, driving through shithole Nebraska for 8 hours doing nothing. It's terrible. Driving is the worst now as an adult. Like, it's fine if I'm like by myself and I can listen to like whatever I want to, but it's just, I had never had any. I guess when I was a kid and dad would drive me to like, you know, different sporting events, like we'd be driving kind of wherever, I never really paid attention to the fact that he must have been absolutely miserable as I, you know, listened to my CD player or did whatever. But man, it's awful. Being a dad and driving is truly terrible. Cause even if they're engaged with something, then you're bored as shit. If they're not engaged with something, then they're yelling in your ear. It's just awful. But like, no one ever offers to drive. No one else. Like, it's just an assumption that,
who else is going to drive? The kids?
My wife has a license, for God's sakes. Anyways. Not as hot as the octopus.
No. I don't think anybody was ready for the octopus take.
That shit hit hard.
I don't think anybody was ready to for the octopus in general. Like, that disappointment that Jeff felt, once he said it, I felt it in my heart.
So do you eat octopus ever, Jeff?
I do.
As a retaliatory method?
No, simply because I like it. I'm an apex predator. I like to eat, you know, as many different things as possible. I also enjoy squid. Squid is quite tasty. I probably have eaten much more squid than octopus. It's just easier to get your hands on a squid.
Do you do it yourself or just?
Yeah, sometimes. Yes, you go, you buy a squid, you clean it. They have very weird anatomy.
Oh, I thought you meant in the rivers of Cincinnati.
Oh, no, I don't, they're not squid like in the Ohio River. If there
not
were.
Not anymore after you're killing them and shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Wiped out the whole population.
I did, yeah. You go to the fish market, you get yourself a squid, they're very cheap, you cut them open, they have all these weird, like, organs that are hard to understand, it's kind of like autopsying an alien. It's a very fun experience.
It's like Independence Day.
Yes, pretty much. Or an alien, you know, an alien, when they cut into the alien and acid comes spraying out.
Right. That's kind of like Independence Day. The movie is Independence Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was scary.
Again, here, first off, I'm going to let y'all be the judge of whether or not I can even talk on this subject, seeing as I'm 25. Am I an adult yet?
Oh, you're an adult, for fuck's sake. Yes. Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. You have a college degree. You have a job. You have a mortgage.
That's true. Okay.
You have a disappointed significant other. That makes you an adult, for God's sakes.
No, she's definitely disappointed all the time. I guess one thing that is not as fun as it was seemed like as a child, as Tim pours drink number three, is...
Drink. Sorry, go ahead.
Is leaving school. As a child... Leaving school, you're like, God, I fucking hate homework. I hate these teachers, right, Tim?
We're the worst.
But you're a teacher too, aren't you? No, you're a chemist. And I hate having to go to the same place over and over and over again and learn shit. And then later on in life, you're like, yeah, learning shit is the best. Mm-hmm. And like, going to school is pretty awesome. And leaving doesn't mean that you eat pizza and play video games all day long and have mom make dinner. No. It means that you're going to the exact same place, not doing much learning, and going to work. And work sucks.
Sure does.
So
sure does.
I would say definitely leaving school. Not as cool as it cracked up to be back when I was watching Nickelodeon back in the day. I feel like that is a pretty definitely didn't outshine the Octopus, man. That was like
the banger.
We started off with a bang, and then everything else after that was disappointing.
I will say this: I love my kids a lot, and I adore my wife.
But not when you're driving.
Well, but if I could choose any like 5 years to live, like to relive on a loop of repeat, it'd be college. It would for sure be college for me that I would relive my life in a loop. That shit was incredible. Yeah. A lot of fun.
Completely.
So yes, leaving that.
I yearn for the days where I thought watching an octopus would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Those days will never come back. They're gone forever. They are.
I've been to 11 different aquariums, every one of them.
But y'all, thank y'all for pretending we are football for the past 45 minutes to an hour. I don't know how long we are at this point. I have been your host, Will Baser.
Will 5K. Oh, sorry. I don't know how fast you run.
Oh, okay. I've been your host, Will Baser. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Jeff Haley, where can we find you?
Tomorrow, I'm giving a talk at Rutgers University. But you can also find me on Twitter at Jeff C. Haley. That's me on Twitter. And I tweet more than Tim, but less than Johnny. Let's say that.
Who tweets more than Johnny? Johnny retweeted the show last week, and then as soon as he did that, I went over to his Twitter, and he had 12 retweets in front of it.
But yeah, he's more active than I am. I will. So those are the places. That's the place you can find me. That's what I'm doing these days.
Cool. Are you in Burnt Orange Nation still?
I'm basically a retired blogger at this point. I'm not really writing anything. My normal life responsibilities have gotten in the way of my like frivolous activities. So unfortunately, yeah, I'm not really writing much anymore.
Cool.
What's the point of your speaking arrangement tomorrow?
It's a seminar on drug delivery. So there's a bunch of people talking Ooh. About drug delivery.
Ooh. Mm. Fun.
Yeah.
Drugs are fun. Tim? Speaking of drugs, Tim?
Yeah. No, that's a segue for days. So InsideTexas.com. Come hang out with us. Got a lot of awesome contributors there and a bunch of good people. And then on Twitter, InsideTexasHoop, no S. Look, I never tweet, but go ahead and follow me anyways, right? What's the worst that could happen? I wouldn't clutter up your feed, right? So you're welcome for that. So if you follow Johnny and me together, the two of us, we'll probably give you as much as like 7 or 8 decent contributors otherwise. So, but yeah, and Johnny's out of control. Like he needs an intervention. Your tweets are constant, just constant. We get it. Trump's not great. Thanks, Jonathan.
Speaking of Mr. Johnny Brashear, where in the world is Timothy Preston?
Tim is currently in California attempting to fight the fires out there by trying to teach the fires how to read. He feels like the flames are angry because they have no upward mobility in the world, and if he could just teach them some basic life skills, they might become productive members of society. Tim is a teacher to the end. Literally to the end. R.I.P. Tim. His ashes will be scattered over an Iowa cornfield once somebody can figure out which pile of embers is him.
So, Tim.
Yes.
Other than Twitter and Inside Texas, where can we find you on the basketball court?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. You know, there's varying levels of comfort depending on where you are and what you do in life, right? I mean, like life is a complex system of you know, all
Tim,
of these different symbiotes.
Could you say that life is frustrating?
Yeah, it could be frustrating, certainly.
Very, very frustrating.
a lot of times, and particularly for my opponents when I'm on the basketball floor. Because look, where I'm most comfortable is outside shooting from distance. But really where my comfort hits its peak is when I'm inside with the big boys. But, you know, shoot, if I had to actually say where I'm most comfortable, it's right in your fucking face.
There it is. And you guys can find us in our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere else you can find a podcast. Thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
Oh, yeah, fuck you, Johnny.
I thought you were taking Johnny's spot, Jeff, but came in there at the last second.